This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to Bugle issue 169 for the week beginning Monday, the 24th of October, 2011, with me, Andy Zaltzman, still alive in London, and still alive in New York, Bugle 2, Gaddafi nil, it's John Oliver.
Ah, take that, Gaddafi, take that. You didn't find me hiding in some hole somewhere. I'm here, Gaddafi. Hello, Andy, hello, Buglers, hello, Gaddafi, hello, Gaddafi. Oh, nothing, he's gone quiet. Andy, before we get going, I did a gig last Friday night in Orlando, Florida at the Hard Rock Cafe. Now, what I wasn't aware of until I got down there was that the gig was literally inside Universal Studios theme park. There were roller coasters and rides all around my venue. There really could not have been any more reason for people to not come and listen to a man talking. And there really couldn't have been any more reason for the man in question not to talk. If I told myself, Andy, as an 8-year-old boy, that I would, 26 years later, find myself inside Universal Studios theme park, I'm sure my 8-year-old self would have said, "Oh, that's amazing. Are we going to go on any of the rides?" And I'd say, "No, we're going to talk to a room full of strangers." And he'd say, "Well, that sounds much less fun." And I'd say, "Well, in the future, we're going to find the idea of doing that more fun than going on rides." And he'd pause, he'd take this in, and he'd say, "I think I want to kill myself." It was even weirder, Andy, because for the entire month of October, it is Halloween at Universal Studios, and there are zombies walking everywhere. But if you are, for instance, performing at a venue there, and you're walking to your venue through the staff entrances, you're going to see zombies taking cigarette breaks. And that is a strange thing to witness, zombies smoking. And not just smoking, Andy, but gossiping about other zombies. I just don't think I'm going to be able to watch Grateful Dead in the same way ever again. But really, there is only one reason to go to Orlando, and that is to leave it. But I mean that in the best possible way, because there is nothing like the scene at Orlando Airport, Andy. It's just jam-packed with kids melting down in complete disbelief that they are getting taken away from what is to them the greatest place they've ever been. They are justifiably screaming, running, desperately trying to escape the security line that is funneling them away from paradise. And I can understand the distress they're experiencing at that age. It must be so confusing. They're just looking up at their parents screaming, "Why on earth would you have brought me here if you were just going to take me away? What is wrong with you? I presumed we were going to be living here now. Why wouldn't we? It's clearly better here than it is at home. I would rather never have known heaven existed than stay here for 2 weeks before being dragged back to shitty earth." There was a giant mouse there. A giant mouse. It hugged me. How can you take me away from this? This is sadistic. Don't think you can buy my silence with an ice cream, although I am going to enjoy that now. This is not the last you've heard of this. Mother, father, you have made a very powerful enemy today.
But I guess what these kids don't realise, John, is that these giant mice leave extremely unhygienic trails of giant piss everywhere. So, you know, that's we couldn't really expect them to factor that into their calculations. So this is Bugle 169, ironically the same number of bugles as different spellings of Gaddafi. And we're recording this, John, just round the corner from the one place that I worked when I had a proper job.
Oh, yeah.
And that's brought back some harrowing memories of living an adult life.
Like you were not cut out for that life.
I was not made for that world, John. I was not made for that world. As always, a section of Bugle is going straight to the moon this week, a time-wasting section. But no time to tell you about that. There is too much to get through.
Top story this week, Captain Crazy corks it. And it's a special opening section to this Bugle, Andy. It's f***ing eulogy time. Check your watch, Andy. Now check the news. Now check your watch. Now check the news again. That's right. It's f***ing eulogy o'clock. Many arseholes aim for this dubious honour, Andy. Yep. Few deserve it. It cannot be issued in a candidate's lifetime. It can only be issued posthumously. It really is the opposite of a sainthood. When eulogising, it's important to focus on the many, many sides of the person in question that you will not miss now that they're gone. And when it came to Gaddafi, he gave us so much that we will miss so little. Andy, I found out about the news on a train from New York to Providence, Rhode Island yesterday. And as the train was pulling out, the man on the loudspeaker said, "This is the Boston service. We're expecting a full train. Let's all try to have a fantastic day." And then literally moments later, the news came on my phone of Gaddafi's death. Little did that man know how prophetic his words were. I only wish that he'd immediately come back over the loudspeaker and said, "Holy shit, Colonel Gaddafi's dead. Forget fantastic, let's have a phenomenal day." After all, that is the opposite of what he would have wanted.
I found out about the result whilst watching a cricket match on the telly.
Oh, yeah?
But it was a really exciting match, John, and... I mean, that did have to take priority, to be honest. But, you know, Gaddafi was going to stay dead, wasn't he? You know, that news was not going to change. But there was quite an entertaining moment on the various news channels yesterday afternoon when the BBC, who are very sensitive about making sure that they only use facts, said there are unconfirmed reports. They're still saying unconfirmed reports that Gaddafi had been captured, whilst on the Al Jazeera channel, they were showing video footage of his corpse being dragged through the streets. So there was a very visual confirmation available at that time.
There's been many developments. Elton John has already rewritten the words to Candle in the Wind yet again, singing "Goodbye Libya's douche" over a mournful piano accompaniment. "And it seems to me you lived your life like an arsehole in the wind." The initial reports, as you mentioned, Andy, were a little mixed as the rumours swirled. There was confusion as to whether he'd been captured, found dead, or found alive and then moments later found dead. It all began to become clearer when images of the man who said that he'd shot him came on TV. The man was holding Gaddafi's golden pistol in front of the cameras as proof of his capture. So let's just pause for a moment to let that little detail sink in, Andy. He owned a golden gun.
Yeah.
He was literally the man with the golden gun. In death, as in life, Colonel Gaddafi was a terrible Bond villain.
Well, you say that, John. Was he not merely a man with his finger on the pulse of the global financial markets? He probably thought, "I need a gun, but I want a gun that is not going to lose its value."
That is a man who commits to returning to the gold standard. The man, the pseudo-assassin in question, told reporters that they'd found the former Libyan leader and former not-dead fugitive hiding in a large concrete pipe in Sirte. And apparently Gaddafi looked at the man and said, "Don't shoot." And I'm guessing the man said back to him, "Oh, really? Because I must admit that was my plan. Tell you what, why don't I try shooting first? Then I'll keep shooting, but then I'll stop. How's that? Deal?" Also, Andy, just tremendous last words from the big man. "Don't shoot." Not exactly the most original last words, but they definitely have a ring to them. And I'm guessing there's a pretty good chance that, as a dictator, you might want to place an emotional cover bet on those being the last words coming out of your mouth. Or, in Hitler's case, the last thing into his ears, as his wife said, "Darling, I'm sure if you just say you're sorry, this whole nastiness will get put in the past." No, Addy, I don't want a drink of poison. I've told you I'm allergic. Why can't I just have a nice glass of milk? Of course I'll say hello to your little friend, Adolf. We're married. Wait, what little friend are you talking about? Don't shoot!
Although, yeah, he said don't shoot, but he was talking to the TV crews who were following him around for a fly-on-the-wall documentary. Maybe he just hadn't signed the release forms. But anyway, but there were amazing scenes, joyous celebrations in Libya, and Western leaders desperately trying to maintain a veneer of dignity as they celebrated the slaying of a man. Joyous scenes, reminiscent very much those scenes of the demises of Ceausescu and Saddam and Thatcher and the Queen Mother. And I guess the scenes in Libya really suggested, John, pretty strongly that Gaddafi really must have had quite poor approval ratings before he was sacked from his job. That's really the message that came across. I don't know what the official figure on that is. But there were a lot of guns being fired in the air, and a lot of these guns actually inadvertently caused a lot of injuries. But Unlike when guns are fired in the air here in this country, the injuries were caused to people as the bullets came back down rather than to pheasants. But there must have been some grouse or partridge in Libya yesterday thinking, "Ah, oh, for f***'s sake, we only migrated here to get away from this shit."
Apparently, as Gaddafi was captured, one man in the crowd was heard on the video shouting, "We want him alive! We want him alive!" before pausing and saying, "Just to be clear, I'm completely joking about that. I think it's hard for sarcasm to come across at this volume. To be honest, I'm surprised I'm still being listened to." They took Gaddafi's body to be identified immediately and for an official cause of death to be issued. And a forensic report was then issued saying that he died from bullet wounds. But should that not technically, Andy, be natural causes? Because, again, if you spend your life pulling the kind of shit that Gaddafi pulled, being shot by your own people is as natural as a flower opening and closing. It's like the March of the Penguins, Andy, except instead of penguins, there are bullets, and they're not so much marching as hurtling.
Well, it was a bit of a come-down for Gaddafi, a man who's counted among his supporters at various times in his life, Nelson Mandela, the future saint, Tony Blair, and Nelly Furtado, who I believe was we discussed before. She did
right.
a private gig for him, see, in exchange
yeah,
for a slightly embarrassing amount of money. But you can still understand. You can understand the Libyans wanting to ditch Gaddafi, despite the fact that he knew Nelly Furtado, which is usually enough to keep someone in power for another 5 years. Because in 42 years under Gaddafi, John, Libya did not qualify for a single World Cup.
Yeah, that's rough.
And they haven't even come close since 1986. So it was no wonder the people finally reached breaking point. I mean, just think how much different could things have been if only they'd beaten Morocco in that playoff for the 86 World Cup, John. It just, you just never know. Well, that's really where it all seemed to start going tits up.
Apparently what happened was that Gaddafi had been hiding in the final area of the country where he had loyalists, the so-called District 2 area of Sirte. And as his supporters were pushed further and further back, Gaddafi and his loyalists attempted to break out in a convoy of vehicles fighting its way through rebel lines. A NATO airplane spotted them and fired on the convoy, destroying 15 vehicles, only for Gaddafi to escape alive and run and hide in what appeared to be a sewage pipe filled with rubbish. And I wonder if at that point, Andy, Gaddafi thought, you know what? I might have been a bit of a dick over the years. Only now, cowering in this sewage pipe, do I see that. Or maybe he was triumphant to the end and said, "Yes, it is I, the great Colonel Gaddafi. Here I am, resplendent in a sewage pipe. I'm the greatest. You wish you had a sewage pipe as good as this to live in. It's got everything. Two entrances, two exits. The whole thing's basically a bathroom. Look on my concrete tube of excrement, ye mighty, and despair."
The International Society of Fugitives described Gaddafi's final hideaway as, quote, "disappointingly half-assed for a dictator of his class." So that's, as you say, very, very disappointing. Very disappointing for the lad. Some incredible words have been said on this matter. These words: "Your forces have toppled the reactionary, backward and corrupt regime. It has toppled idols and destroyed them in one of Providence's fateful moments. As of now, Libya shall be free and sovereign, no oppressed or deceived or wronged, no master and no slave, but free brothers in the society over which, God willing, shall flutter the banner of brotherhood and equality." Inspiring words. Spoken by Muammar Gaddafi when he toppled the previous government in 1969. So it didn't quite live up to his early propaganda. To many, he might have been a revolutionary hero turned homicidal maniac, a man who seemed to have read Orwell's Animal Farm and thought it was a self-help guide. But to others, he was just a homicidal maniac. I guess to the Bedouin tent manufacturing industry, he was a one-man bulwark against the global economic downturn. But to me, John, you know, when I look back on Gaddafi, he will always be the father of the former Libyan football captain, Saadi al-Gaddafi.
Yes, yeah.
I know maybe I shouldn't always view things through the prism of sport, but, you know, an international footballer is an international footballer. According to Wikipedia, at one point there was a law in Libya forbidding the announcing of the name of any football player other than Saadi al-Gaddafi. And the other players only had their numbers announced. So, I don't recall Gaddafi claimed himself to be a kind of socialist revolutionary hero. I don't recall that bit in the collected works of Karl Marx about the announcing of footballers. But anyway,
Also, Andy, surely that is now going to be the most historic sewage pipe in the world. It could even become a tourist attraction. People are going to want to get their photo taken in front of that sewage pipe. There may even have to be a gift shop selling little souvenir sewage pipe keychains, posters, pencils, children's cuddly sewage pipes, and novelty pens that have sewage pipes on the side. When you turn them upside down, Colonel Gaddafi pops out and gets shot in the head. In terms of international reaction, Prime Minister David Cameron gave a slightly UK-centric speech saying, I think today is a day to remember all of Gaddafi's victims, from those who died in connection with the Pan Am flight over Lockerbie to Yvonne Fletcher in a London street, and obviously all the victims of IRA terrorism who died through their use of Libyan Semtex. But that's not all we should remember, is it? We should also remember all the weapons that we sold to him with which he perpetrated his many human rights snafus. And more than anything, we must not forget, Andy, lest we forget, that we must remember him as a total prick. He was a total unremitting prick.
Well, Cameron said Britain should be proud of its role in Gaddafi's downfall. And I guess, when you think about it, we did really help lull him into a false sense of international acceptance. And he let his guard down, and boom, one rebellion, he's gone. Yesterday, a tearful Tony Blair paid tribute to Gaddafi. Said he knew how to hug a man, and his private jet was a doozy. So, very much expected. There's some interesting Twitter responses as well. A bit of... this came from Aisha, at Aisha Gaddafi. Bad day for the family, !! Hashtag, at least I'll save money on birthday presents next year. Also quite a bit entertaining Twitter banter between some of the despots in the Arab region. This is from at Bashir Syria Boss. Ouch, that looked painful. RIP Big Mo. Hashtag, better check my life insurance policy. This is from at Saleh Yemen number one. You owe me £5 at Gaddafi Doodar 42. You've been outlived! Loser! Smiley face. At Hosni Mubu says, farewell at Gaddafi Doodar 42. Pleasure working with you, buddy. Rather you than me. Hashtag trials are really dull. this is at Ben Ali Despot to at Gaddafi Doodar 42. Ha ha! Did you not get that Saudi luxury exiles brochure I sent you in time? Hashtag you're dead, I'm not. And also another one from at Hosni Mubu. Just come in. Looks like North Africa's going to struggle to put out a side in next year's Despots 5-a-side football tournament. Sad face. And this from Saleh Yemen number one again. At Gaddafi Doodar 42. You should have shaved your beard off big time. You look silly on the telly from that angle. So a good bit of banter from the Despots. Bit of banter.
Well, I think most of the global reaction was along similar lines, Andy. And that was, you know, upon hearing of his death, most people thinking to themselves, oh, good, that's nice. Oh, it'll be lovely not to have him in the world. My only regret is that I never got to tell him to go f*** himself to his face. And yet, Andy, when humanity yins, one man is compelled to yang. And Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, sensing that there was one more empty seat on the crazy train, told reporters, we shall remember Gaddafi our whole lives as a great fighter, a revolutionary and a martyr. They assassinated him. It is another outrage. Before saying, they found him where? In a sewage pipe. Wow, that is pretty funny. What was he wearing? A wig? Oh, no. What were his last words? Don't shoot! Okay, I'll take that great fighter thing back, but I'm standing by the rest of it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is, as you say, it's very important that we mustn't remember him like that, John, not as Chavez. We mustn't remember him as the plucky underdog he became against overwhelming heads in the last couple of months of his life. Because we love an underdog in Britain. Yeah. But I think we should probably try and remember him as the overdog that he was. Yeah. An extremely barky and aggressive overdog at that. We shouldn't remember him even as a valuable trade partner, a quirky UN entertainer, a voluptuous blonde Ukrainian nurse aficionado, or four-time Bedouin Tent User Magazine's Man of the Year. Let's not even remember him for his will they won't they hate each other. No, they love each other. No, they really do hate each other. Hackneyed rom-com with the West. Let's remember him as a shitbag. Let's give him that. He's earned that, John. I think even his closest friends and associates would admit that the Colonel could be, at best, conversationally domineering.
There was only one thing greater, though, Andy, than Gaddafi's last words, and that was Gaddafi's second last words, his penultimate words, if you will, because multiple witnesses testified to the fact that as the revolutionaries approached Gaddafi, he looked at them and said, what do you want? Andy, that takes unbelievable confidence. In fact, that either takes confidence or it takes a level of craziness unprecedented in our lifetimes. Is there a chance that he actually didn't know what they wanted? Perhaps one of the revolutionaries should have made it clear to him and said, well, that's actually a good question, CG. I suppose what I want is to avenge the last 42 years of hell that you've inflicted upon this country. I want to, at the very least, kick you in the nuts. But I cannot, hand on heart, say that I also don't want to shoot you in the head. Does that make me a bad person? What's that? It does. Then what does that make you, you total f***ing arsehole? If you had the slightest bit of self-awareness, CG, the merest sliver of shame, you would have spent the last decade furiously kicking yourself in the balls. And the fact that you haven't done that makes my toe yearn for your testicles.
Well, this is just coming in now. In an emotional press conference this morning in Misrata, the late former Libyan despot Gaddafi has spoken to the world's media. And let's just hear some highlights from the dead man's departing press conference. I admit that the rebels are now hot favourites to triumph in the Libya conflict. And that is, of course, disappointing. But I have learned some valuable lessons from my overthrow and death. And I think that will stand me in good stead to do better next time. It was my first go at running a country, and I admit I got some things wrong. Maybe a little too much hoarding wealth for me and my family, and maybe a little too little not killing my political opponents. Certainly yesterday I did not look at my best. It was a disappointing way to go. I thought the ref didn't really get a hold of the incident. And when you're playing tag at this level against rebel fighters, you need a ref who will take control. I don't blame the rebels, but I think they took it a little too far. I don't know who fired the fatal shot. It was quite hard to tell, as I was being beaten shitless at the time. But I'd rather focus on my own performance than the opposition. I don't want to take any credit away from the rebels. They've launched a terrific rebellion, and fair play to them, the better side won on the day. Although, you know, if I'd had NATO support instead of them, the result could have been different, as it was for the previous 42 years. I was disappointed with my own performance. Maybe I should have retired on top in about 2007, when I'd been accepted back into the international community with free rein to stick it to my own people whenever I f***ing wanted. With hindsight, maybe I should have done that, although it is easy saying this, now I'm dead. Thanks for listening.
Palestinian swap shop news! And there was a major prisoner exchange that took place this week in the Middle East. Gilad Shalit, the Israeli soldier who was captured aged 19 in 2006 and spent the last 5 years held captive in Gaza, something that, incidentally, he shared with the majority of the other residents of Gaza. I guess they just had fractionally more space to move around. He was finally released by Hamas in a deal with the Israeli government, whereby the Israeli government would return 1,000 Palestinian prisoners. That's a pretty depressing exchange, right, Andy? The Palestinians seem to have suffered hyperinflation in terms of the value of their prisoners.
That's right. There's now 0.001 Israelis to the Palestinian.
That's just catastrophic, yeah. That exchange rate. Now, you might be thinking, wow, that must be one hell of a 24-year-old Israeli prisoner now.
Yeah, it must be the most amazing. It was 1,027 Palestinians and a couple of first-round draft picks as well. But he must have been an amazing. He was a tank crewman, John.
Yeah.
What a tank crewman he must have been to be worth 1,000. Maybe he could melt and reform. Or maybe he's got a magic nose.
But he definitely does put a lot of pressure on young Gilad's shoulders. He's like a young footballer who goes to a huge club for a record-breaking fee. and who then has to live with the price tag over his head as people wait for him to do something to justify it. What I'm saying, Andy, is that Gilad Shalit is the Theo Walcott of political prisoners. He's got to produce, and he's got to produce fast, or the critics are going to start circling. Sports writers in the Jerusalem Post are already apparently publishing columns saying that, at best, Gilad was worth 300 Palestinian prisoners, and this just shows that the transfer market has gone mad.
It's all his agent. It's all his 5 years of talking him up, John. It's just, you know, the agent just driving his transfer value. But also imagine how those 1,027 released Palestinians must feel. I think, is that all I'm worth? Yeah. Is that... You know, I'm a proven murderer, stroke, political prisoner, delete, as applicable. Is that all I'm worth? 0.001 is 19-year-old Israelis? I want out. I want to go work somewhere where I'm properly valued. I want a job in IKEA. That's going to be tough psychologically if you are a released Palestinian. You're basically worth one of Gilad Shalit's fingernails. That must be so hard to deal with.
Israel initially refused to negotiate at all, but later entered indirect talks brokered by Egypt with the involvement of a German mediator. A German mediator, Andy. A German mediator. The world's changed, that's all I'm saying. The world's changed. Both sides hailed the deal as a victory, and it's a very rare situation to have a day when both Israel and Palestine are celebrating at the same time. And it doesn't involve dead bodies and flag burning. So we really have to cherish these moments when they come around. They're like solar eclipses. The truth is that Israel is a country that has national service. Most Israelis have children or know of children in the army. And the Gilad Shalit situation over the last 5 years has captured the imagination of people. And the Israelis really should be commended for taking such a sustained emotional interest in having a soldier return home from capture at all costs. America, on the other hand, seem to have compassion deficit disorder when it comes to soldiers. I guess it's from no longer having a conscript army. Because compare the 5 years of attention for Gilad Shalit with Bo Bergdahl, the young American soldier captured by militants in Afghanistan 2.5 years ago. You don't hear about that guy every day on the news here. In fact, you don't hear about that guy on the news here at all, Andy. At all. There's very little in this agreement as well that hasn't been on the table for years. Hamas suddenly got interested in a big prisoner deal as soon as Mahmoud Abbas started lobbying the UN for official membership. This was incredibly popular in Palestine, and Hamas were worried about the soaring approval ratings for Abbas and his non-violent approach to the peace process. Hamas have openly declared that they prefer the violent approach. So it was clearly a cynical political calculation to try and halt their own declining popularity in the occupied territories. And Netanyahu, on the other hand, wanted the release as a high-profile feather in his increasingly droopy-looking cap. So does it not say something about the situation there, Andy, that both sides in the negotiation could only do this fundamentally positive thing if it was motivated out of pure spite?
And now the moment you've all been waiting for, the latest instalment of the Congressman's Penis. And I'm afraid it's been postponed because of Gaddafi and his useless attempts at evading justice.
It just shows, in death, Andy, that prick can even do terrible things.
Well, I guess, you know, people say, well, it would have been nice if he'd been had to face the full force of justice and accounts for his crimes, but then he could have delayed the Congressman's Penis by, you know, 5, 10, 20 years as it got dragged through the courts. But as it is, I have actually got it. Well, I say I've got it written. I've edited the original Grisham transcripts, and we'll have it in Bugle 170.
That's very exciting.
Week. Very exciting indeed. And just quickly, the Rugby World Cup final this weekend, John, before I know you've got to go, I'll do a couple of emails after you've gone. You've got to go to, was it Tampa?
Tampa.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds like, is that as much fun as Orlando?
Well, let's hope it's more.
You're really hitting Florida pretty hard, John.
Yeah. Yeah. It does seem strange, Andy, that I'm doing Orlando and Tampa in consecutive weeks. I'm not gonna deny that booking wise that seems a little odd.
Right. Could you get to go on one of those funny little boats with great big fans on the back?
Well, I mean, I presume that's the case. Yep. I definitely want to basically concuss a crocodile while I'm down there.
But Rugby World Cup final this weekend, I imagine there's been talk of little else on the streets of New York despite America's disappointing early exits.
Yeah.
Over here, Wales lost to France last weekend after a controversial sending off of their captain early in the game for dumping a French player on his head. And so what else? This was the greatest injustice since the last time Wales lost a rugby match. But France have been unfeasibly shit, John, and they've managed to get to the World Cup final. And France reaching the final is viewed by a lot of rugby fans as equivalent to a goat winning the Grand National. And they are almost certain to get absolutely slaughtered in the final by the New Zealand All Blacks, whose entire economy, of course, is dependent on rugby. If the All Blacks lose, they simply hibernate for a couple of years before emerging saying, what's the point, we're just dust in the wind of history. But they are something like 10-1 on to win the World Cup. And there'll be, it's 24 years since New Zealand, the greatest rugby team in the world, it's 24 years since they won the World Cup.
Yeah.
Largely due to developing a reputation for choking like a narrow esophagus pensioner on an unboned sardine, sawdust and Lego brick on flowery poppy seed bap sandwich. But this time with home advantage and the added advantage of playing a French team who have put the shit into holy shit, how did they make it to the final? They will almost certainly win. So the main excitement for the neutral is which hacker will the All Blacks do before the game. Now, for non-rugby fans, the hacker is a traditional war dance that the All Blacks have done for a long time before their rugby matches. Roughly translated, it means, are you talking to me? Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me? Then I'm going to f***ing kill you. But that tradition has been updated with a new tradition, and by new tradition I, of course, mean piece of bullshit. A new hacker, which began in 2005, was invented, I believe, by a man called Kevin, or Derek. Derek, I think, and which means basically the same thing. I'm going to basically translate it means I'm going to rip your nuts off and stuff them so far down your throat you'll be brushing your teeth with a fire extinguisher. But it ends with a throat-slitting gesture that I think roughly translates as, and excuse me, I'm not 100% up to speed with Maori Sign Language, I think it roughly translates as, I'm going to slit your throat. Now, that is not the most nuanced message to be sending. Seems to be slightly outside the remit of sport. Official regulations say that as the All Blacks opposition, you're not allowed to respond to the hacker with anything other than looking back, trying to look tough. Because then you'd be offending the whole of All Black lands by violating a tradition as old as time itself, assuming they believe that time itself began in 2005. So anyway, do look out for the silly dance, as I describe it to my kids, if you are watching the World Cup final, and also look out for the All Blacks pounding the French like a recently divorced chef's garlic.
Come on, the Kiwis!
How's the World Series going, John?
1-1. 1-1. Come on. Come on, the Cardinals. Yeah. Just can't have Texas win. It's just not good for the world.
I just want to hear the name Albert Pujols over and over again. So, that's it from John for this week. Enjoy Florida, John.
I'll try.
Yep.
Not sure it can be done.
Bring me back an alligator head or some balls. I don't mind which.
Have a good week, Buglers. Bye.
Your emails now. This one comes in from long-time bugler Nick, who sadly tells us he's fallen on hard times, and says, I have a favour to ask. I don't need to have this email read on air, and you haven't had it in full. I've edited it down considerably, but it would mean a lot to me if you just said, hang in there, Nick, etc. So, I don't know what does etc. mean? I mean, is that for me to choose, Nick, or for you to choose? I guess if it was for me to choose, I would say, you know, hang in there, Nick, and learn my carbonara recipe. It will provide you with happiness and nutrition for the rest of your days. But I don't know. Fill in your gaps. Fill in the etc. yourself. And if any other buglers have also fallen on hard times, that also applies to you. This one comes in from Nick Denny, who writes on the subject Smurf's embarrassment, which was a pretty harsh one-word review from the New York Times. But anyway, dearest Buglords, I'm currently staying in a hotel near Washington, D.C. It's a nice hotel with rooms complete with a selection of on-demand movie titles available on the TV. From as little as £5, I could pay to watch any one of a fine selection of films. Whilst browsing said movies, I came across what is presumably becoming a Bugler favourite, The Smurfs. However, I was more than staggered when I saw the price. $17! 17 American dollars. I was so staggered that in my continued browsing of the selection of films, I kept coming back to the Smurfs. $17. Can you imagine it? That could buy most of a cow's worth of steak at Costco. Anyway, I was so distracted by the staggering cost for what is obviously not a $17 worthy film. Zing, take that in absentia, John. I kept coming back to it. I was amazed. So amazed that I accidentally hit the order button on the remote. There was no confirmation screen. It just went straight to the thank you for ordering screen. Needless to say, I panicked. No combination of buttons would undo my order. I considered sucking it up and watching the film. But I eventually decided that was not acceptable. I manned up and phoned the reception. After much mirth from the receptionist, she kindly cancelled the order. I took a deep breath. I mean, it could have been worse. At least I hadn't had to explain to the receptionist that I hadn't meant to order a film from the adult section. Actually, that probably wouldn't have been as bad. Which leads me to my final point. For completeness, I must add that the films in the adult section cost $18, or the cost of the Smurfs, plus $1. I don't know which is the greater insult, that Mr. Oliver's starring movie appearance is being sold at such an extortionate rate, or that Mr. Oliver's finest cinematic role is being sold for $1 less than Debbie Does Dallas. Yours, Nick Denny. That is pretty much a full zing for John on his way to Florida, the home of the Smurfs. So, thanks for those emails. Do keep them coming in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk, and you can follow the Bugle Twitter feed @HelloBuglers with all the latest dictator banter in the aftermath of Gaddafi's very disappointing Thursday @HelloBuglers. So, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with Bugle 170, the last ever bugle, which can be used as a checkout in darts. It's going to be an emotional time for us all. Have a good week, Beatles. Be strong.
All right.